This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. We are 1,000 years into the Trump presidency, I think. Rabia here, and I'm joined this week with Wajahat Ali. Hey, Waj.
Hey, I am filling in for Susan, and I'm going to try to make my voice as feminine as possible. I'm already failing.
You're failing. You're going to fail. You also have to talk really, really fast, and your mind has to work even faster. So I think it's kind of late in the day, and we're both not going to be able to do that, but... We actually, just for our listeners, so you know, in case there's some weird awkwardness, this is the second attempt at recording today's episode because technology sucks. Can somebody out there please develop a good podcast recording app like using Skype? Thank you very much. All right. So I want to pick up last week where we recorded on Tuesday, and I think that evening was the State of the Union, which, did you watch it?
Yeah, first of all, it's remarkable that that was only a week ago because it feels like it was 14 years ago. I mean, that's how time moves in the Trump administration. It's stunning how that was literally last week and 46 news cycles ago.
We got to figure out like what the Trump, you know, like how you have dog ears and cat ears. We got to figure out what the Trump time, like, you know what I mean, continuum looks like as compared to regular humans.
It's like the third lowest level of inception, like 1 minute equals like 20 years. Inception dream levelscape. Yeah, it's I saw it, unfortunately. It was 90 minutes and I felt more dumb afterwards, and literally I felt like an idiot, and I felt like, why am I a fool? And I asked my wife. My wife literally walked into the room, and you know Sarah, she never swears. Yeah. She goes, why the F is he still talking? What's happening?
Sarah,
why is this going on for so long?
Yeah,
because like she's like, wait, I thought it was like a 30-minute State of the Union. Why aren't you taking care of the kids? I'm like, this thing is not ending. So yeah. I felt like as a nation we got dumber. But you know, that was a week.
You know, this is the power of this asshole. Look, I was on a flight to LA, and you know, the lovely organizers who were flying me out flew me first class. That never happens. This is the first time Rabia Chaudhry has flown first class domestic. You know what? I am like, how the hell am I going to go back to econ? Anyway, forget that. The point is, I was laying on my back eating nuts and cheese, just like living the life. And then I was like, I got to watch this. Yeah, I mean, like, either way, I got to watch this. No matter what happens, no matter how much he makes us crazy, we keep getting sucked in. And you know what? I was really hoping Pelosi would just be like, forget it. You're just not coming this year. But he went. And so I've got a clip here that I want to, that's from the New York Times, by the way, just to give him credit. But let's listen to some of the key moments in the State of the Union from a week ago.
Members of Congress, the state of our union is strong. That sounds so good. An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way. No one has benefited more from our thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year. You weren't supposed to do that. Thank you very much. Large, organized caravans are on the march to the United States. I have ordered another 3,750 troops to our southern border to prepare for this tremendous onslaught. This is a moral issue. In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built. We are now making it clear to China that after years of targeting our industries and stealing our intellectual property, the theft of American jobs and wealth has come to an end. Tonight, we are also joined by Pittsburgh survivor Judah Samet, He arrived at the synagogue as the massacre began. But not only did Judah narrowly escape death last fall, more than seven decades ago, he narrowly survived the Nazi concentration camps. Today is Judah's 81st birthday. They wouldn't do that for me, Judah. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you very much.
So right afterwards, you know, I was watching the commentators. I think it was before the response started, and I was watching Van Jones on CNN, and did you hear what he said about the speech? I thought it was so on point.
Yeah, he was very subtle. He called it a, quote, psychotically incoherent speech, with cookies and my favorite dog poop. And this was redemption, because let's not forget last year, Van Jones infamously said that this is the moment in which Trump became presidential. And all of us were like, really, Van? Really? But I feel like he was kind of making amends for that missed call, let's just say.
Yeah, mercifully, I don't think this year I heard any commentator say anything like that. I feel like that era's over, because what we realize now is if the man doesn't literally tear off his clothes and throw feces, we're like, oh, he's so presidential now. But it was an incoherent speech, and cookies and dog poops is about right, because there are the warm fuzzies. There was, like, you know, all this language about unity, and then there was, like, crazy stuff, and it just went back and forth and back and forth. Was really long. It was it over 60 minutes? I don't even remember.
I think it was 90 minutes. I could be wrong, but it felt like forever. And I feel like, you know, the metaphor of the evening was the fact that the president walked past Congress, walked past Republicans, and stood behind the podium. And the whole time, no one told him, hey, bro, your tie is crooked. And like, literally, he began with his speech with a crooked tie, and he tried to phase out Nancy Pelosi. You know, that's what apparently reports said, that like they tried to get her out of the image, but they couldn't. She was prominently behind him the whole time.
Well, how could they? That's always how it is. Every State of the Union, you always see the speaker sitting right behind the vice president.
But they tried for like an extreme close-up, but they couldn't. They couldn't box her out, and her amazing literal and figurative clapback kind of stole the night. And the fact her facial reactions when he gave her the speech, and she just like, you can just like read her internal monologue. She goes, oh my God, as she was like flipping through the pages. And I think she kind of just gave up. After like the seventh page, she goes, all right, they just F this. Let's just get through this.
Every so often, I'd see her go back to flipping through. And I think she was just trying to figure out how far along are we and how close are we to the end. But let's talk a little bit about the substance of the speech, if we can even call it that. What were some of the more prominent kind of policy points? I know the wall kept coming up. The caravans are back. I mean, the midterms are over, but every so often the caravans keep coming around. He did say that he was going to be sending more troops to the border because of the caravan threat. It's amazing he can get away with this, because it doesn't exist, this caravan threat. What else? What popped out at you?
Three things. Number one, he played his greatest hits. And the tone and the speech became incoherent when he tried to switch from unity to be terrified of those brown people coming from the southwest border, you know, caravan, murder, crime. And, you know, he literally spent a good portion of that speech just tripling down on that one point that got him hammered in the midterm elections, where Dems picked up 40 seats in, I think, what is can be called a tsunami. And then the second thing for his foreign policy, and this is a trend that your audience should really pick up on, is this demonization of Iran as he's cozying up to Saudi Arabia, right? So Iran is the radical evil, like the central evil threat to the world. But oh, but by the way, Kim Jong-un, great guy, based on tweets from the last week, right? And then the third thing I would say is this kind of warning shot slash rallying his base, preparing them for the Mueller report and the investigation and the Dems over, taking the House and doing oversight. And essentially, he kind of gave this warning shot to them, saying, stop wasting your time when it comes to oversight. Let's
He's
get back
like,
to work.
There can be no peace when there's investigation. What?
Benghazi. What? Clinton's emails. Whitewater. And the thing is, though, the entire speech, and especially that point, which he tried to, again, that was for his base, to make them riled up, to show them, look, it's a deep state conspiracy, right? You can't trust anybody. You can't trust law enforcement. Right. You can't trust the FBI. You can't trust the media. You can only trust me. And by the way, what I just explained right now is the way authoritarian leaders and cults work, that the singular personality is the only person to trust and everybody else is an enemy against them, right? So he's kind of really deliberately, if you will.
We can also trust Putin, by the way. We can trust the Russians. Remember that?
Russian. And I think the difference, though, with this speech and last year's speech is last year's speech, there was a kind of swagger. You know, the Republicans had the House and the Senate.
Yep.
You saw this speech. The Republicans weren't as enthused. He didn't get.
They were subdued. They were a bit subdued. And there was a lot more enthusiasm and excitement on the left of the aisle, especially with the sea of women in white, the new ladies in the House. And on the other side, it was just a lot of sober, sad, older white gentlemen.
Yeah, the cell phone was classic. He kind of owned himself, praising women. And then Pelosi gave the nod and all the women stood up. And I think that was another. and like you said, right, on the other side of the aisle was a bunch of like bemused old white men. And on the Dem side, it was like women, people of color. And I think Trump gave him he goes, okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah. He was a bit of a good sport about that. So, I don't know if he immediately got what was happening, because if he connected what he said to their reaction. But
thought that Pelosi was mocking him in the clap. I definitely think he thought, oh, she's praising me. And then later on, he's like, oh, this is the meme of 2019.
How could you look at how she was clapping at him and not know how sarcastic her face was? Just like, anyway. And that was in response to specifically, what had he just said? He had talked, was it about divisive politics or was that something like that?
Jeez, I don't even remember. It's so long ago. Does it even matter? Honestly, does it even matter?
But it was something that was obviously like one of those, again, self-owns, that it was like so obviously applicable to himself. But it was one of these things about like being divisive and stuff. And she's like, yep, that's you. Before the holidays, I filled up a box with some of the oldest memories I could find around my mother's house, my home, my sister's home. You know, the photographs are falling to pieces, the albums that nobody's taking care of, the VHS tapes that nobody can watch anymore. And I put them inside a legacy box. Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Over 450,000 families have trusted Legacy Box, and I'm one of them. They've got over a decade of experience. All the work is done by hand right here in the USA. And don't worry, they will not lose your memories. Legacy Box has easy to follow instructions, and they have safety barcodes for every single item. So every item will have you just pop a barcode onto it. It's so easy. You're going to get all your original pieces back, and you can track the process the entire time. You'll get personalized updates at every single step, up to 12 personalized email updates saying, hey, this is what's happening with your precious memories right now. Now, there's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. So visit legacybox.com today to get started. And for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to legacybox.com/45th and get 40% off your first order. Legacybox.com/45th and save 40% off today. Get started preserving your past now. You know, he was so excited about doing this. I remember that morning he had updated his Twitter banner with this big, you know, State of the Union tonight at 9:00. Like it's, you know, like some kind of season finale of a reality show. He really wanted to give the speech. And he was so, even when Pelosi, remember those letters back and forth? He kind of sucked it up and he was like, okay, well, you know, I'm still going to, you know, he really wanted this opportunity and he got it. Now let's talk a little bit about the response. You know, Stacey Abrams was chosen to respond to the State of the Union. And I thought that was a very inspired choice. And what did you think of her response?
I think Democrats were very smart. A woman of color addressing a crowd, a diverse crowd. She prepared her own remarks. She was forceful. She was eloquent. It was, compared to Trump's speech, it was a model of brevity. And she spoke passionately about voter suppression. And she's a perfect messenger for it based on what happened in Georgia. We all know that if it wasn't for voter suppression, if it wasn't for deliberate purging of specifically black voters in Georgia, she would have beaten Brian Kemp. And also, voter suppression is going to be a big, big issue going up to 2020. And also, it kind of establishes Stacey Abrams. It establishes her Democratic future, right? Because maybe she won't have to just run for governor. Maybe she can run for Senate. Or maybe she can be a candidate. Why not?
Yeah, I don't think she's going away. I think we're going to see more of Stacey Abrams. And, like you said, there's voter suppression was an issue there. But also, there was election irregularities. I mean, like, there's reports of, like, thousands of votes just kind of disappearing into the void. I don't know where. I believe there's some kind of investigation into that. I have no idea what's going on. But that might be exactly why they picked her. But, you know, right now, the Democrats, there are a lot of rising young figures in this party, which kind of takes me to the next thing I want to talk about, which is kind of the spate of announcements. We have, the slate's lining up for the Democratic primary. Let's talk a little bit about some of the announcements this past week, but who's going to be running for president?
I feel like this is where we need Oprah to be like, you're running and you're running and you're running. Everybody's running. First of all, the Californian in me, it was just like horrified by Amy Klobuchar's announcement in literally in the blizzard without a heater or without a hat as the snow fell on her. And I'm like, the whole time I'm watching this, like the Desi uncle in me is like, please someone give her chicken soup. Please tell me there's a heater there. She's gonna get pneumonia. William Henry Harrison.
They would have made like a little bit of a switch at that. I mean, like they knew that storm was coming. I don't know why they just kept it out there, but
it was smart because you know what? Like honestly, a part of me is like Midwesterners are mutants, and I admire the fact that skin is different from like normal humans. Like, did they just are just freaks of nature? But it really dovetailed well with the theme that she wants to present. Is that she is an underdog from the Midwest who didn't come from money. She's the daughter of an immigrant, right? Her father is a journalist, and she's a very popular senator. And what she lacks in, say, the bells and whistles, guess what? She has grit. And that's what she said, right? And she showed it by standing in front of a crowd, literally in a blizzard. Meanwhile, it's a great contrast to Trump, who just recently couldn't even attend a World War I memorial service in Paris because of the rain. So I thought that was clever. That was one. Right. That was one candidate.
Yeah. How many have announced now? You've got Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg. Anyhow, he's the mayor of Southwest Indiana. And he apparently also is running. I don't know much about him. Obviously, Kamala Harris is running. Kristen Gillibrand is running. Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio. I mean, there's a lot. And of course, our favorite Tulsi Gabbard. Why is she even part of this party? I don't understand.
Don't forget the people of means. Please, somebody think about the people of means. Howard Schultz is also running, allegedly, as an independent.
Howard Schultz is running. That's right. But is he running as an independent? Or is he running?
Right now, it's independent.
Okay, so he's not running. So basically, he's just a spoiler, is what he's going to be. Thanks so much, Howard. And then there's
the pronunciation for Pete is Buttigieg. Buttigieg.
I'll just let you say it. And also, there's a not very well known Maryland congressman named John Delaney who's running. I don't know why. But anyway, now, interestingly, polls are showing that the person in the lead right now is actually none of the people who's announced that they're running, and it's Biden, is Joe Biden. Is leading the polls for Democrats who want to see him win the primary and run. What do you think? Do you think he's going to throw his hat in?
Well, it's also Biden is number one, and number two behind him is Sanders, right? And both
Sanders,
of them have their hat in the ring. I do think Biden wants to run, but he's also trying to see whether or not there's appetite for him running. Number one is his age. Number two is his makeup as, you know, a white male. Number three, for better or worse, he does represent the old guard establishment. But he is a recognizable brand name. He's attached to Obama. And what he's saying privately is that I will give you the Rust Belt and I am your surest path towards victory because I'll give you Pennsylvania. I'll give you Wisconsin. I'll give you Michigan. And without those three states, Trump literally does not have a path towards victory.
Right. And he could team up with Kamala Harris. He could team up with somebody who would hit a different demographic. And I think that could make a smart pairing. There's also Beto O'Rourke. And I don't know if he's running or not, but it looks like he's headed in that direction.
I would not be surprised if Beto runs because just this week there was a rally off, right? So Trump went to El Paso, which was an interesting decision, to again double down on the wall. Right. El Paso, by the way, is one of the safest cities in America and right. has, you know, lived safely without the wall, even though there was a fence. And when that fence did go up 2 years before and after the fence, in fact, crime spiked up. But relatively, it's been safe. So Trump, I think, addressed about 6,500 people. And right across from Trump, stone's distance, Beto had a rally. Trump acknowledged
that was a brilliant move. By the way, I feel like that should happen everywhere Trump goes. There should always be a popular anti-Trump rally just to make him crazy.
No, but what's interesting is he named him, which means he acknowledges him. He's a threat. And then he said a few hundred people are there. Nope, 15,000 people to listen to Beto. And what I've said, and I'll say again, is Beto's Senate campaign, I thought, was a very attractive national campaign for a Democrat. Grassroots, charismatic, social media, a good communicator, young.
He's like a kind of a Kennedy charisma. Like, I don't know what it is about him, but yeah, he's...
No, exactly. Got Clinton, Obama, Kennedy, charisma that really kind of mobilized a lot of people. And so if he throws his hat in the ring, and I think he will, I think he'll rise. I think he'll be a formidable VP, at the very least a VP candidate. What do you think about Beto Harris or Harris Beto?
I think that would be a pretty strong ticket. But what do you think about Booker, by the way? A couple of years ago, I used to think, Booker's like could be like the future, but... I don't know if he's got the juice. I don't know if he's got like the impact and the strength and charisma and like the personality to really do it now anymore. But there's Warren too. And Warren is hugely popular, you know, Elizabeth Warren. And you know, she's earned her stripes, right? And also Trump is deeply threatened by Warren, which is why he can't stop talking about her and basically being derogatory about, you know, her supposed ancestry. I mean, I don't even understand that entire controversy because even now, what I understand is that, you know, Senator Warren has some, you know, Native American ancestry, I don't know, generations ago, like some.
She brought that upon herself. And recently she kind of apologized for mentioning that she was a Native American on her applications, right? College applications. And the whole, like, you know, it gives a perfect target for Trump. He's going to attack her relentlessly over this. And I think it's something to be said that Donald Trump mocked Elizabeth Warren when she announced the race for presidency just a couple of days ago. He said, quote, "See you on the campaign, capital letters, trail, Liz."
Right.
And for those listeners who
that is on purpose. That is on purpose.
And that's Trail of Tears. That is the systematic erasure and massacre of 4,000.
Genocide.
Were relocated, forcibly relocated under Andrew Jackson's presidency. And the reason why I mentioned that is remember when he awarded the Navajo veterans? He deliberately did that in front of Andrew Jackson's portrait. He seems to be obsessed with Andrew Jackson. So it just, and the fact that we kind of casually talk about this and have forgotten about this, can you imagine if Obama did this and mocked the Trail of Tears and the forced relocation and murder of like 4,000 Native Americans, the genocide of Native Americans. But with Trump, his racism is so casual, it's become normalized.
That's the cornerstone of his entire administration, of his campaign. And Make America Great Again is exactly about this. Make America Great Again is exactly about white supremacy. It's about the genocide of people of color. It's about, you know, superiority of any other race, religion, creed. So it's not just casual. It's deliberate and reinforced over and over again in these ways. And it's even hard for me to imagine this guy who's just has the IQ of a rock to even be that kind of subtle about it. But, you know, I mean, like there's, you know, with that tweet, he capitalized that word on purpose. And it makes me wonder, because I will say things about that tweet. I think that was one tweet that was actually, the grammar was right in it. So which makes me think he didn't actually tweet
He's
that.
He's presidential.
Well, either that or Stephen Miller's doing it. I really do think that there are other players who are, you know, maybe, I mean, for all I know, he doesn't even understand what Andrew Jackson signifies. Like, I don't even want to give him that much credit because I think he's so fucking stupid.
Well, his son, Don Jr., responded with savage. And so I think they know very well what they're doing. And especially
I did not see that. Like, what a piece of shit.
Yeah. So I think you're being very diplomatic and generous, and I admire that quality.
No, I just think he's stupid, but okay. Anyway, I wanted to mention something else. I mean, like, you know, we know, like, in the rally he gave, and this rally, he just loves rallies. It's been a minute since he gave one. He said he's been very, very busy. He's tweeted many times about how busy he's been lately. I think he just disappeared. Oh, by the way, let me ask you a question, because I did miss the beginning of State of the Union. I feel like I haven't seen the First Lady in a while. Was she there? Because I don't remember her being there.
She was there. She got a very warm applause.
Oh, okay. I feel like I haven't seen her in a long time. And he's just been holed up around the holidays, like, by himself. And suddenly he's back out. He's back out in the world with these rallies and stuff. So when he was in El Paso at this rally the other day, you know, he made a couple of different, not a couple, he made, like, you know, obviously lie after lie. He again started attacking the media. And somebody from the media was actually attacked right then and there. There's video footage of it. He talked about crime statistics, El Paso, lie. He talked about the size of the audience, lie. Something else he said that was just shocking. He talked about the Ralph Northam abortion thing, and that's the governor of Virginia, and that's a whole nother scandal that we haven't really touched upon right now, or actually in the show at all. But can you tell us what he said about that issue? Because the thing about this is the kind of lie that really can get people killed.
So Rabia, basically what he said was, and I wanted to find this for your listeners, is, quote, the governor stated that he would even allow a newborn baby to come out into the world and wrap the baby and make the baby comfortable and then talk to the mother and talk to the father and then execute the baby. Execute the baby, end quote.
So he's referring to late-term abortions, right? And this man doesn't even understand how, I mean, he has multiple times, like, I don't know how many times he has referred to abortions that happen, like, on the delivery table, which is actually a delivery. That's not an abortion. Like, you're actually having the baby. And, you know, the actual quote, and this is Ralph Northam was on, I think, a radio station. And he was talking about something very specific. And obviously it wasn't this at all. And I don't know if Trump does this on purpose again, or he just doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't understand how abortion works, when it happens, how limited, how difficult it is. But right now across the country, we are seeing a real pushback in multiple states on abortion rights for women. At the national level, I think we're going to see a challenge to Roe v. Wade. And I kind of can't believe this is happening in America in 2019.
Well, no, Robbie, it's a very deliberate attempt to smear Northam and also the Virginia House Bill 2491. It's deliberately done to obfuscate the issue and promote the false narrative that apparently all these Dems, now that they're in power, they're going to commit infanticide, based on both that radio program that you mentioned, based on the bill itself, based on Kathy Tran, the bill sponsor. She said she misspoke and said, listen, you know, infanticide is not allowed in Virginia. So that's not going to happen. And even
where
Northam,
is it allowed? Where is it allowed?
Exactly.
What are you
exactly.
Talking about? That's
and
murder.
So, and so, you know, that bill would loosen some restrictions on abortion in Virginia, but it got this national attention at the end of January, based upon this very deliberate promotion by the right wing media ecosystem to say, look, Northam and all the Democrats are now going to commit, you know, like, you know, infanticide. Is that what you want? And so it's the pro-life movement that is deliberately pushing this. And so he really is aware that Trump deliberately mischaracterized what Northam said. But right after he said that, the rally, the crowd, the base, huge boos and rounds of applause. And that's what you do. You confuse them, you anger them, you rile them. Who cares about facts?
Yeah. So, you know, this is not something he brought up in the State of the Union, but I'm talking about in terms of, like, where I see things going in the next couple of years. This is an issue that the right has been working on for a long time, and now they have a real crusader who has been successful in changing the Supreme Court to the point where it could actually come to pass.
Can I just add this? There, a report came out today that says that Trump allegedly might have had eight, well, not himself, but women who he's associated with had eight abortions. So that's your Trump, Mr. Pro-Life, has essentially forced or asked women who he's been with to have eight abortions over his lifetime.
Thing is, Wajahat, this is not the first time I have heard of somebody in the GOP leadership, I mean, now the president, but where this has happened. You know, they find, you know, a mistress is discovered, her abortion is discovered. You see this over and over again. But the thing is, they don't care. The evangelicals don't care. His base doesn't care. They know. They know he's vulgar. They know he's stupid. They know he's disgusting. They know he's a national security threat. But if he is able to, like, basically get their agenda passed, which they've been working on forever, you know, on some issues, they don't care. That's what I realize. Trump could perform an abortion by himself on TV, and they'd be like, oh, well, as long as the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, we do not care.
Nobody's perfect. Yeah, and that's according to The Spectator, and it said that Trump might have paid as many as 8 women to have abortions and keep quiet about them. And what you said right now is absolutely on point, because Jerry Falwell Jr., son of Jerry Falwell, evangelical leader, right, the head of Liberty University, in a January 1st Washington Post interview, when they asked him, like, is there anything Trump could do that would make you stop supporting him? He said no. Nothing. There's nothing Trump could do. And Trump himself knows his base, because remember he bragged, I can shoot someone in the middle of Times Square and they'll still support me. And these evangelical leaders in particular, these people of faith, have compared him to Cyrus, the pagan Persian god, whom nonetheless God used for a benevolent cause. So they say that he's a flawed king and he's serving God's purpose. That's why we must support Donald Trump.
I really am ready for the second coming right now. I want Jesus to descend and be like, by the way, Donald Trump is the Antichrist and I'm going to destroy him right now. I'm just ready for it. Anyway, but before Jesus gets to him, Bezos might. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with this crazy, crazy story. When it comes to taking care of your health, all of us kind of go to the same things that we think we're supposed to be doing, you know, eating well, drinking lots of water, and exercising. And of course, those are very important things. But one of the most important things we're supposed to do for our health every single day is brushing our teeth. Yet most of us don't do it properly. Well, Quip can help you do it right, because Quip is a better electric toothbrush that's created by dentists and designers. It was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and actually even enjoyable. Quip has sensitive sonic vibrations. They're really gentle, very gentle for sensitive gums, and that's because people often brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are just too abrasive. They also have a built-in 2-minute timer. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides. Have you been that person? I've done it. I start brushing. I'm just brushing the same side for the longest time. I just kind of zone out. You won't do that with Quip, because it's going to vibrate and let you know. What I love about Quip also is that it's beautifully designed. My Quip toothbrush is white and gold. It's very sleek. I travel with it everywhere. It's got a great multi-use cover that mounts to your mirror, and it completely declutters your sink or cabinet and, you know, makes travel easy. And I love just using it at home, because I don't have these big clunky electric toothbrushes now to deal with on my counter. Now, also a reason that I had to switch to Quip was because I am terrible at remembering to buy new toothbrush heads, but I don't have to think about that with Quip, because brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. All right, now, Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. I've told you so many reasons I love Quip, and I'm backed up by 20,000 dental professionals, so I can't be wrong. Now, Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th, you'll get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip, getquip.com/45th. Crazy. And Bezos himself, I got no sympathy for this man, but he is just like, he has no, you know, most people after everything come out about him would just maybe, I don't know, disappear for a minute. He's just all in. So let's talk about what's going on with him.
Well, first and foremost, children, don't take pictures of your penis.
Stop doing that.
You know, maybe this is the time that we just stop this culture of taking pictures of your junk and sending it. Number one. Number two, Jeff Bezos.
I want to know. I have yet to meet one woman in my life. I have asked my friends. I have taken Twitter polls. Who wants them? Nobody. I'm telling you, men, nobody wants them. No woman I know wants them.
Okay? I'm not judging those who take it. I'm just saying probably not the smartest idea. So as those who don't know, Jeff Bezos, the wealthiest man in the world, founder of Amazon, who now owns the Washington Post, allegedly had an extramarital affair with television personality Lauren Sanchez. And apparently it was Lauren Sanchez's brother who leaked the photos. That's the latest news. But Jeff Bezos did do something, I think, positive, is that he took to Medium, did a blog post on February 7th, and essentially described how American Media Incorporated, which is the parent company of National Enquirer, which is very close to Donald Trump, run by David Pecker.
It's the publication he thinks is more credible and trustworthy than like the New York Times and the Washington Post and anybody else.
And let's not forget that as of now, and let's see, this is going to be huge, right? Because Pecker actually has an agreement with the prosecutors of SDNY. He has an immunity agreement. He is singing and talking to them because allegedly, according to Michael Cohen, Karen McDougal, a Playboy model, had an affair with Donald Trump. And through American Media Incorporated, they essentially bought her story and shelved it right before the elections. And so if indeed American Media Incorporated, according to Jeff Bezos, did a, quote, sextortion, threatening to publish these pics of Bezos unless he made a public statement that he had no knowledge or basis for suggesting that AMI's coverage was politically motivated or influenced by political forces, that's a extortion. Actually, there's a new word for it called sextortion. That's a crime. And it's possible, if Bezos can prove this, that Pecker would lose his sweet immunity deal with the Southern District of New York. This is pretty big. It just shows you, do not piss off people of means. They will fight back.
I mean, if there's anybody you don't want to go after, maybe it's like the richest man in the world. What do they think was going to happen? These guys just lay down and be like, oops, sorry, don't publish my dick pics. I'll do whatever you say. I'll stop the investigation. I'll pull up. Of course not. Are they crazy? It was kind of a brilliant move.
It was very brilliant move. It's exactly what you have to do. You have to punch a bully in the face. And thankfully, this person, the victim, is the richest man in the world. And again, it shows you how close this is to Donald Trump. Because as we know, Donald Trump has called the Washington Post the enemy of the people, fake news. And also, this is how Saudi Arabia comes into all of this. That's
another crazy angle. Another crazy angle here.
Saudi Arabia, if you guys have forgotten, MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, U.S. resident and journalist, in October. Washington Post columnist. Washington Post has been on top of it, has been relentless, demands justice. Donald Trump takes the side of Saudi Arabia, and it seems as of this week, is going to bury it. He has taken Saudi Arabia's word over his own intelligence committee's words, over CIA's words that said pretty clearly that MBS ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And so this kind of hints.
And there was a deadline, right? There was a deadline for some sanctions to be and nothing happened.
Oh, yeah. There was a 120-day essentially deadline for the United States government essentially to respond to this report. And essentially, Donald Trump and the administration is kind of like, we're not going to actually pretty much issue a ruling or like basically a conclusion about what happened here. And on the DL, Republicans are seething angry and pissed off about this.
Lindsey Graham was pretty pissed off about it. I don't understand Lindsey Graham, though. He goes back and forth. This man, he goes from bootlicking to, you know, do something about Khashoggi. It's really odd.
Yeah, but like, look, you know, basically just on, I think it was Friday, the Trump administration said it reserved the right to decline lawmakers' demand under the Magnitsky Act that the president report to Congress with a determination of who was responsible. And again, I want to remind the listeners, the CIA has said that MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, was responsible. So the question here should be, right, this is an easy slam dunk. Why is President Trump not signaling out MBS of Saudi Arabia for the murder of a U.S. resident? And we know, because he has said so, you know, I do great business with Saudi Arabia, arms deal, plus they need Saudi Arabia to pressure Iran for these sanctions. And it kind of signals, Rabia, to the whole world that you can murder a U.S. resident, but if you give us a lot of money, hey, we're open for business.
I also think he just likes the thuggery. He likes these strong men, thuggish, murdering types, right? I mean, like, how far and quickly we have fallen, basically. You know, we, within a matter of 2 years, we are now a part of this. It's not an axis of evil. It's like a square of evil. You know, like, basically, we're buddies with Russia, Saudi Arabia, and North Korea. And America is like the fourth point on that square. I mean, this is where we are within 2 years. That's
crazy. What happens with the kleptocracy. But look, this is an excellent opportunity. If Republicans actually want to hold Trump accountable, they can.
They don't. They won't.
Well, I mean, a report came out yesterday that said privately Republicans are seething. Privately. Well, let's see if they make their private seething public. This would be the perfect opportunity to do so. Lindsey Graham, as you said, used to be the great defender of, you know, U.S. rights, allegedly, and is very much against Saudi Arabia, but he might be still be gunning for that AG spot. Let's see. Let's see what happens.
I know you would not buy a $50 t-shirt if you knew it only cost $7 to make. I mean, I wouldn't do it. And with Everlane, I never have to, and neither do you. Because with Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothing. What I love about Everlane is they make premium essentials using the finest materials without any traditional markups. These are pieces, like I said, that are essentials. They will stay in your closet, they'll be used over and over for years, and beautiful quality that's also gonna last for years. Now, Everlane wants you to know what you're paying for and why. So they actually tell you their real costs. I mean, what company does that? And they're radically transparent about every single step in the process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories that they work with. Everlane's clothes look better, they cost less, and they last longer. Now, essentials like their Cotton Crew t-shirt are exactly what they should be. Simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. I've gotten a couple of gorgeous Italian-made leather shoes and a beautiful Italian leather clutch from Everlane that I probably am going to wear until the end of my days. And every time I've taken that clutch anywhere and worn those shoes, people ask me, where are those from? Beautifully, beautifully made, just buttery. So right now you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/45th and you'll get free shipping on your first order. So check it out. That's everlane.com/45th. Once again, everlane.com/45th. All right, so speaking of Saudi Arabia, a new report comes in today. Very, very, very alarming. Can you tell us what you found, Wajahat, about, you know, our new best friends, what we're about to do for them?
Yeah, so according to Axios, Trump was to huddle with U.S. energy executives to discuss nuclear exports. But the reason why that's deeply troubling is one of the issues included the possibility of providing Saudi Arabia with a path to nuclear power. What could go wrong?
Amazing.
And Saudi Arabia says it wants nuclear
everything.
Power to divert more oil for export, right? And MBS led negotiations with the State Department last year. Remember when he did the tour and he was a reformer and he met with Hollywood and he met with Facebook and he met in DC and he met with like all the corporations, right? And they feted him and vice versa. And, you know, apparently, don't worry, it's not going to be for the bomb. It's only going to be, of course, to divert more oil for export. And this, again, is Saudi Arabia, the same country which has an authoritarian leader, which cracks down on dissidents, which cracks down on women, which briefly kidnapped the prime minister of Lebanon, which ordered a blockade.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, forget that one. Which ordered a blockade of Qatar, which, by the way, has a U.S. base with thousands of U.S. soldiers, which ordered the murder of U.S. journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And let's just
and that's
say
the one we know about, by the way. What's the one we know about? Like I said before in the show, you know, I have, you know, Saudi friends, citizens who are like, this kind of stuff happens all the time. It just doesn't get international attention the way this murder did.
Yeah. And let's just say Saudi Arabia is not really well known for its human rights records or for its promotion of a certain strain of Islam, which to most Muslims is antithetical to our religious traditions. And some would say is actually very extreme.
You know what really sucks, which I had. See, you went to Saudi and you like did the pilgrimage that Muslims are supposed to do, like at least once in their lifetime. I haven't gotten a chance yet, and I feel like I'm never gonna get the chance. Or they'll give me a visa and then they'll kill me while I'm there because of I'm always talking about this stuff. But now I feel like I can never go. What am I gonna do?
I went anyway on CNN for like 13 minutes and bashed Saudi Arabia. Not Saudi Arabia, the country, but I'm talking about U.S.-Saudi relations and, you know, everything I just mentioned right now when Trump was visiting. And then I wrote a piece for it in New York Times, and somehow I got a visa to do Hajj. I just thought, like, they just probably thought I was a worker. They're like, all right, let's let this labor work come in. And nobody bothered me. So I'm hoping
see,
they just look
you
at
had you. The, you had the courage to do it before we knew about the, you know, before Jamal Khashoggi was murdered. Now we know, like, to the extent they might go and But maybe we're small enough potatoes and won't matter, and I hope that's the case. But yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about going, and now I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know.
But you actually do bring up a very sobering point, right? Because if you, like you and me, right, we're vocal, we have a platform, we write, you have a show. I come on TV once in a while. If Jamal Khashoggi, a U.S. resident and journalist with the Washington Post, can be brutally murdered in an embassy in Istanbul, and the president of the United States of America does not care, and in fact sides with the killer, Mohammed bin Salman, then who are we?
Nobody's. Nobody's. All right. On that happy note, moving on. We know the chief of staff for Trump position is apparently supposed to open up pretty soon. And somebody who might be filling it, apparently Matthew Whitaker, who is the acting attorney general of the United States, that he is maybe in the running for chief of staff for Trump. I want to talk about him because there was a hearing this past week, which was crazy. Did you watch the hearing? This guy is I shouldn't say he's unreal in the era of Trump, but pretty amazing, pretty unreal.
Yeah, it was stunning to watch. It was like if the kingpin was incompetent and sweat a lot, it would be Matthew Whitaker. But that was something else to witness. This is the acting attorney general. And you know, if Barr doesn't get it, then I go back to my point that I think Lindsey Graham will make a play for it. But this is the acting attorney general who auditioned for this role essentially on CNN. He repeated all the talking points that Trump wanted to hear about
the Mueller
investigation, got his attention, somehow then ended up on Sessions' team, then leapfrogged over all qualified people. He has no respect within the DOJ. He's a person who is affiliated with a company that is accused of defrauding of veterans. And he's a person who's openly said that he thinks judges in America should be Christian. And he doesn't believe in Marbury versus Madison, that it was correctly decided, even though anyone who's gone to law school will tell you that's the pivotal Supreme Court case that gives the Supreme Court judicial review to rule whether or not laws are unconstitutional. This is the man Trump chose as an acting attorney general, who allegedly, after the hearing, Rabia, went to Trump Tower.
He went to the hotel. Well, I will say this. So during the hearing, Democrat Rep. Hakeem Jeffries kind of said what we were all thinking. He said, I'm confused. I really am. We're all trying to figure out, who are you? Where did you come from? And how the heck did you become the head of the Department of Justice? Now, this guy's performance was not just embarrassing. It was arrogant. It was confrontational. Right. He was just a flippin' meathead who was an asshole. And, you know, after it was over, I mean, like, some of the responses were just like, I think we were all in shock. And one of the responses I want to read here, this is a former assistant director for counterintelligence at the FBI, Frank Figliuzzi, said that, I'm not kidding when I say I've interviewed terrorists who are more cooperative and respectful than Matt Whitaker was today. The attorney general's role is America's lawyer. We are his client. So here I want to insert a clip so our listeners can get a taste of Whitaker.
We're going to have plenty of theatrics. Bring your popcorn. I'm thinking about maybe we just set up a popcorn machine in the back, because that's what this is becoming.
The committee has authorized me to issue a subpoena to compel your testimony if necessary. Now that you are here and prepared to testify, I agree there's no need for us to resort to that measure for now. Have you ever been asked to approve any request or action to be taken by the special counsel?
Mr. Chairman, I see that your 5 minutes is up, and so I don't know if your time's been restored or not.
Mr. Attorney General, we're not joking here. And your humor is not acceptable.
We're all trying to figure out, who are you, where did you come from, and how the heck did you become the head of the Department of Justice? So hopefully you can help me work through this confusion.
All right, well, Congressman, not...
Mr. Whitaker, that was a statement, not a question. Okay. I assume you know the difference.
Are you overseeing a witch hunt? Congressman, as I've mentioned previously, the special counsel's investigation is an ongoing investigation.
You wouldn't oversee a witch hunt, would you? You'd stop a witch hunt, wouldn't you?
Congressman, it would be inappropriate for me to talk about an ongoing investigation.
You may be confused here. This may appear to be a contact sport, but it's not a gridiron, and I'm not letting you run out the time.
I'm going to cut you off if you make long speeches. We have very limited time. You do not need to thank me for asking the question or compliment me that it's a good one. I'll assume they're all good questions, and you're grateful.
Can you say right now, Mr. President, Bob Mueller is honest and not conflicted?
Congressman,
I'm not a puppet to repeat what you're saying. You have challenged my character.
No, no, I'm asking you a question. I control this time, Mr. Whitaker. If you want to ask the chairman for time of your own, you can do it. This is my time. Mr. Whitaker, you don't run this committee.
The president specifically tweeted that he had not lashed out.
Not asking what he tweeted. I don't have a lot of confidence in the veracity of his tweets.
Keep your hands off the Mueller investigation. I yield back.
At the request of a number of people, the committee will stand in recess for 5 minutes.
You have 5 minutes for lunch?
Mr. Whitaker, before you took the call from President Trump, you had a fascinating career. Owned a daycare center, a concrete supply business, trailer sales, GOP activist, U.S. attorney who unsuccessfully prosecuted Iowa's first openly gay state legislator on trumped-up Hobbs Act charges that were dismissed by the jury in about an hour, Senate candidate. There have been some scandals, too. Here's one. Trump's acting attorney general involved in a firm that scammed veterans out of life savings. Veteran says, I spent the money on a dream. I lost everything. But the newspapers say you struck gold when you arrived in Washington, which the president calls the swamp. Here's one. It tells the story. Conservative nonprofit with obscure roots and undisclosed funders paid Matthew Whitaker $1.2 million. According to the Washington Post, in the 3 years after he arrived in Washington, Whitaker received more than $1.2 million as the leader of a charity that reported having no other employees. That's a pretty good deal. Now, what was the name of the charity that you ran, Mr. Whitaker?
Congressman, you've mentioned a lot in your...
No, but I'm asking you a very specific question. What was the name of the charity?
You have challenged my character.
No, no, I'm asking you a question. I control this time, Mr. Whitaker. If you want to ask the chairman for time of your own, you can do it. This is my time. Mr. Whitaker, you don't run this committee. You don't run the Congress of the United States, and you don't run the judiciary.
Gentlemen will suspend.
So like you said, Barr should be confirmed for this. I think he will be. I think on both sides of the aisle, they're like anybody but Whitaker, right? Get him out of the role as soon as possible. I don't think Whitaker's going away. I think he's going to end up somewhere in the White House.
There's someone who I can't mention told me that he strongly believes that William Barr is actually a patriot. And even though he has a very troubling record on certain issues, that he's actually wants to be appointed attorney general to actually preserve the reputation of the office, and he'll actually play by the book and not be Trump's lackey.
He has long believed in very expansive presidential powers. He wrote a private memo about He had no business to. But why are you writing a memo about like what's happening in the special counsel's investigation? Nobody's asking you. You're not in the government. Like there's just to get Trump's attention.
But that's how you get Trump's attention. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, it's possible. I hope he was right. I mean, I went back and forth. This is a very informed, educated person who has a tremendous experience. So he says within that community, there's a hope or desire that this guy, despite, his troubling positions, he has several, that he actually, at the end of the day, wants to preserve the integrity of the office, the attorney general's
office. For me, it's not a partisan issue. It's not that he's conservative or conservative views. I mean, Mueller's a Republican, right? Comey was a Republican. It's not about that. It's about having integrity. It's about, like you said, preserving the institutions, preserving democracy, and holding people accountable. And I think people on both sides of the aisle, there are people of integrity who are willing to do that and stand up, despite maybe some of the differences on certain, policy issues, political issues. If that's the case, I mean, that would be great. He backed up Mueller during his hearing. He said, we're personal friends, and I have a lot of respect for him. So. Let's see how that goes. Anyhow, the Whitaker stuff, it was just a complete shit show. Is there another shutdown happening or what happened? There was supposed to be another one on Friday, right?
Negotiators agreed in principle to provide about almost $1.4 billion for fencing and other barriers, which would allow for about 55 miles of new fencing. But that's a fraction of the 200-mile steel and concrete wall. I'm sorry, beautiful steel slats that Trump originally demanded. Also, a reduction in the number of beds in detention centers, about a 17% less reduction
beds. They will put them on the floor. They will put them on the floor. It's not going to matter.
But what we know is Vice President Hannity was not at all pleased with this. President Coulter was not at all pleased with this. And as of right now, you have definitely support in the House and Senate with a bipartisan support, but will Trump go along with it? And I think, just like last time, we should not put anything past him. And a national emergency, why not? Just to flex it for his base, even though it's going to be under litigation, even though you're never going to get funding for this ridiculous, unnecessary 2,000-mile wall, even though in order to build a wall, you're going to have to use eminent domain and take private property. That's never going to happen. People will never allow that. But just to flex for his base and to get Coulter and Hannity and, you know, Dobbs off his back, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, even though it's going to be a death knell for a lot of Republicans running for 2020, especially these vulnerable senators like Cory Gardner. And even though, as we've seen, that 35-day shutdown, which, by the way, remember I predicted that he would break the record. Siraj said he wouldn't, but I said he was going to break the record on your show. I wouldn't put anything past him, Robbie. What do you think?
I don't know what to think anymore. But no, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I also think when it comes to like the wall issue, at the end of the day, he always finds a way to make it a win for himself. And the base believes it. He tomorrow could tweet out a picture of the Great Wall of China and be like, we built the wall. Everybody will be like, great, we built the wall. This is like breaking news. Mike Pence just tweeted out a tweet concerning Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. And this is about, for those of you who may or may not be following this controversy, she called out AIPAC, which is a very strong Israeli lobbying organization, pro-Israel lobbying organization. It's been around for decades. She used language that was perceived as an anti-Semitic trope, and it has been very problematic in the last few days. So, Wajahat, can you give us a little more details about what's going on?
Yeah, so Congressman Omar has apologized. Nancy Pelosi, the party leader, also denounced the comments. But Donald Trump today, earlier in the afternoon, denounced Ilhan Omar, which is rich. And just about 20 minutes ago, Vice President Mike Pence does the following tweet. I'm going to quote him. @IlhanMN. Tweets were a disgrace and her apology was inadequate. Anti-Semitism has no place in the United States Congress, much less the Foreign Affairs Committee. Those who engage in anti-Semitic tropes should not just be denounced. They should face consequences for their words.
What do you think those consequences should be? I mean, what do you think he's trying to get at?
First of all, this is exquisite in its hypocrisy, because Donald Trump in the midterm elections mainstreamed the worst anti-Semitic conspiracy theory about the Soros conspiracy, that George Soros, the Hungarian-American Jewish billionaire, is somehow financing the caravan that was bringing over Middle Eastern suspects and Mexicans, right? This was the same anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that emerged from the far right in Europe and has been used in Hungary and in Poland successfully, by the way, by their governments. And now that came to America and Trump used it, so did House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who promoted it. This is the same president who promoted the quote-unquote globalist language, which is, again, an anti-Semitic trope. And in the midterm elections, we saw so many Republicans use the Soros conspiracy theory, the globalist language, just straight up shameless anti-Semitism. This is the same president that said there were some very fine people in Charlottesville, which included KKK members, white supremacists, men who said the Jews will not replace us. And this is the guy who, remember, had that photo, promoted the photo of Hillary Clinton with the Star of David, which was a wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right,
you know,
right. I remember that, yeah.
And then she also talked about, you Jews, I don't need your money. Trump said that to a Jewish crowd. And it goes on and on and on.
And just recently, just last week, very prominent Black Trump supporter Candace Owens did kind of a, well, you know, but Hitler wasn't so bad, or just, I mean, like, this kind of stuff is not new in this administration with anybody attached to it. Having said that, having acknowledged all that, yeah, their hypocrisy is disgusting. It's whatever. What do you think specifically, though, about what Omar said herself?
What I think is, I take her at her word that she perhaps did not intend to be anti-Semitic. I think she is within her right to criticize the influence of any group, right? I think criticizing AIPAC's influence does not make you anti-Semitic, just like criticizing Saudi Arabia's influence and lobbying efforts, even though AIPAC is not a country, does not make you automatically Islamophobic. That being said, You can and should do it without resorting to anti-Semitism or Islamophobia and not use that language or images which could be triggering, especially when you're a congresswoman. And I think those two specific tweets she did a couple of years ago, she said Israel has hypnotized the world. That was during 2012, that last attack on Gaza in 2012. Right. And then, you know, that word hypnotized. And this time she said it's all about the Benjamins reference. Yeah. So these are two very triggering anti-Semitic tropes, right? Jews hypnotize the world. They're a cabal. You know, everyone, they make everyone dance to their tune, or like, oh, it's all about the money. So I do think our leaders and influential personalities all have to be a little bit more thoughtful and sensitive. And I think she got that pushback and she absorbed that pushback. That being said, it's ridiculous to see the amount of attention this tweet has gotten in the past 2 days when we have a blatant white supremacist, Steve King, from Iowa in Congress for years. And we have Donald Trump's use of blatant anti-Semitic conspiracy theories just right now in the midterm elections. And yet people are focusing on Ilhan Omar. And the last thing I'll say is, and you and I know this, we can't BS ourselves that her religious identity is not driving this kind of unequal focus and attention on her tweets as compared to white Christian Republicans.
I'll be honest. I follow a lot of Jewish American leaders who are both either like journalists or religious leaders online. And there's, for most folks, there's been a pretty reasonable response from the Jewish American community, especially after her apology, saying, okay, well, she's like, you know, I'm listening and learning. They took in the apology and it was kind of even-handed. What we're seeing is attacks mostly from like the right, which are, like you said, very hypocritical, but there is a disproportion. I will also say this, though. I feel like, and I don't know if it's just me and like the bubble that I'm in, the news bubble that I'm in, but I do see her, Rashida Tlaib, and, you know, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, like over and over and over, I feel like these three women, as three women of color, you know, freshman congresswomen, are getting a lot of attention, a lot of attacks constantly. I think they are a dire, dire threat to the dying old white GOP.
You're absolutely right. They're women. They're women of color, and they're women who don't shut up, and they're women who know how to use social media for the most part. Yeah. They have a diverse constituency, and they are taking on, for better or worse, the sacred cows that no one used to take on.
But I agree with you. They should take them on with more wisdom. Simple as that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, in this particular case, yeah, Ilhan Omar, just be more sensitive about it. And I think, I mean, to be fair, she says, I unequivocally apologize. She got criticized by Pelosi, and I hope she is more careful. She can make the same exact point with more careful language.
Yeah, and I want to say this just as on behalf of the tribe, and I mean like the American Muslim tribe and other Muslims around the world. I have seen this myself, where Muslims use anti-Semitic tropes without actually realizing that these are anti-Semitic tropes. This is true. It took you and I both watch and others. I mean, we've been through like, you know, a fellowship, you know, studying these things, Shalom Hartman. We've done a lot. We've worked a lot with the Jewish American community to understand how some things are triggering. What are the historical backgrounds? What are the implications of it? And I know that even I've done that without knowing. But I think, you know, what Ilhan Omar did was this. It was pointed out to her. She learned from it and she apologized. And I think that's exactly what I want to see in a leader, that I got it wrong. I did not realize even like what the implications of these things were. And I'm sorry. And that's good leadership.
And that's also, it's good leadership from a certain members of the Jewish community who said that instead of pushing you out, let us use this as a moment to educate and heal and moment, have a conversation. And so that's good, right? It's like you have too much to contribute. You're valuable. And I think people are learning, right? After kind of the what happened to Keith Ellison, I think the unfair smearing of Keith Ellison from last year, you remember that.
Yeah.
After what happened to Mark Lamont Hill, I think there are people within Jewish communities who are like, wait, we are ostracizing Muslims and Arabs and African Americans and liberal Jews and young Democrats and progressives. This is not a winning strategy. There should be a space where we can have these conversations, but just be more thoughtful and careful.
Right. Well, thanks for tuning in this week. Thank you again, Mujahid, for joining us. And no, you are not filling in for Susan. We like having you even when Susan is here. You are part of now our team of ongoing hosts and co-hosts. You are part of the 45th family. So thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll chat soon again.
I am the Tony Randall of the 45th. For those of you who are old enough, Tony Randall was a frequent guest on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. Literally, when
you're not even old enough. What are you doing?
When any guest used to cancel, like Johnny used to go to the closet, and Tony Randall would be just there, prepared, ready to jump out. So I am the Tony Randall of 45th. I'm honored. Thank you for all the listeners for tolerating me and my Trump impression.
Love you, Tony. Our listeners love you, Tony. Thanks so much for coming on. All right, guys, we'll be back in 7 days.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.